All right, go ahead and call this meeting to order. We set up the ground rules, and the members of the committee didn't have an opportunity to do this last year. Warning to the committee, we want to be sure we don't chase any rabbits, so we want to keep it on goal. What I'm looking for from the departments are blocks or structures or whatever that we as a legislature can remove to make government more efficient. A lot of the things I got, we're talking about trucks or whatever, that goes to appropriations, management decisions, that goes to appropriations. I'm looking for things that we can do to reduce costs, increase efficiencies with changes in statutes is what I'm looking for here today. And for members of the public, which we've got several folks here that are going to make suggestions or make observations, we appreciate that tremendously. They're, in my mind, the star of the show. We will also have, when we have the departments in front of us, we will go through emails that we have gotten and relate that to that. Any emails that a department wants, we'll make available to you. But the key here is from the bureaucrat side, we need to know what we need to do in changing statutes and structure to make us more efficient. And from the public side, we appreciate your input, and we will take every bit of it seriously. So any questions from the committee members? Not. We'll try to. We've got a lot to get through. We'll try to be fair, but I also want to keep everybody on point so that we can get our job done that's been assigned to us. So first up, we have Department of Conservation. What I want to know is what we can do to help you be more efficient. You can justify weight trucks and what have you, appropriations. That's not what this is for. So here we go.
Good morning, Chairman.
Good morning.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Aaron Jeffries with the Missouri Department of Conservation. Appreciate this opportunity this morning. I'll be rather brief with you this morning. As the department has implemented several changes already within the agency that I think you might find beneficial as you move forward with this rebooting session. If I may, I'll go through some of those things that we've implemented that you may find beneficial as well. One would include the vacancy management plan that the department implemented in September 2009. The goal of that plan was to place 174 positions within the agency on hold. Currently, we have 155 of that 174 positions already on hold. We've done this through attrition and retirements. That will represent 11% of our workforce. Also, we're in the process of closing up to 13 offices around the state, making modifications to select programs and services. We're in the process of closing down two old hatcheries, changing how we do area maintenance, increasing the vehicle mileage up to 140 miles before we turn it over, and we're changing the hours of operation at our nature centers. When fully implemented by July 1, 2011, this will save the agency $7.5 million annually. We're also advancing and growing with technology. This is vitally important to communicate internally, improve efficiency, but also communicate with our constituents, all 6 million citizens around the state. An example is we're moving to an e-permit system. I've discussed this with some of you already. This will be the future of how you purchase your hunting and fishing license in the state of Missouri. This new system, e-permits, will allow you to purchase your hunting and fishing online from your home computer or at your office computer, and then print them out on paper. Once fully implemented, 2 years from now, this system will save the state $500,000 to $1 million annually. We're also using GPS research in our bear research projects and other projects around the state. We're finding this much more effective and efficient and is really helping us better manage the fish forest and wildlife of the state. We're also currently evaluating our total rewards. This would be an employee work package, which would include benefits, training, insurance, compensation, and work life. Once fully implemented, we're going to identify cost-saving measures and implement those plans. This will help keep the agency competitive, but also internally equitable. As many of you also know, the department is self-insured. Since this plan's inception, we've used a cost-share model where the commission and the employee shares the cost of health insurance. This helps ensure lower premiums, but also keeps the plan solid. Progressive changes over the past couple years, including changes in the deductibles and copays, have really helped the agency.
But I don't mean to be there, but is there anything we can do to help you be more efficient? That's what I'm looking for here. And then if there's questions from the and I appreciate. I mean we've got what you've done. So I'm trying to be. But is there anything that the department needs the General Assembly to do?
I apologize, Senator. We weren't able to identify anything.
Okay. I didn't. That's reading your first.
Understand?
Because I don't expect a lot. Hey, it's there. Any questions from the man? You may be off the hook. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I think that you distributed everything you were talking about to the and I hope folks, most of these guys can read. So we'll do that. And again, I don't want to waste your time or the committee's time. So thank you much.
Thank you, Senator.
All right. Oh, just a second. There were some emails. Did anybody have any questions that were brought up through the emails on Department of Ag? I mean the conservation. And off the top of my head, I don't remember anything that I thought that was. I mean, we will probably forward those emails to you so that you can go through that. But I don't remember anything off the top of my head caught my attention. So thank you much.
Thanks,
appreciate
sir.
It. Department of Ag, and we've got some. We'll start out with the Department of Ag, and then we may get DNR mixed in here a little bit because there were some of the emails that crossed the two departments. So we may put both of you on the hot seat. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. How are you, Mr. Chairman? Members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Hagler, Director of the Missouri Department of Agriculture. Glad to present to you today. We submitted, as you have already discussed, saving initiatives that we've already implemented, including lab, warehouse, and vehicle downsizing. So I'll leave that in your hands. If you have any questions about that, I'd be glad to answer those. We did come up with a few of small changes that we thought could be very helpful. I think a prime example of that is in our Missouri brand law. That law, as you know, has been in place a very long time. The fee for printing brand book has been set in statute since that inception of that law, $15 for the book. It has not changed since then. We know, as you know, in agriculture, we've been very reluctant to pass on those costs to our producers and consumers, but one example that we had is that if it requires, the statute requires us actually to publish that in physical hard copy. It seems to me that if we were to amend that statute so that we could publish that online and make that available, and then if someone wanted a hard copy, they could actually pay the cost, the actual cost of the printing the booklet, which is about $120 per booklet to print and mail it. I don't know if any of you have seen it. Some of you probably have brands, but it's about that thick. We have the technology and the capability to put that actually online. It's just that we're statutorily required to print it.
I think that's one thing that we probably need to look at, too. If you get a lot more volume, maybe at $15 a hit, you could probably make that work. But
right.
Never mind.
It
takes a lot of volume. When it costs $120 and you're only charging $15 to make it work, I understand
that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another one that we've started discussions with the Department of Office of Administration with, and I think we might be able to work this out without a statutory change, but we've been working with them, is that our current record retention policy. We're required to have a physical hard copy as well as we already take and electronically scan that copy. Of course, every time you do that, when you scan it, keeping that hard copy, filing it, having the file cabinets of space and all that hard copies, I think that anything that we can do as a state to move toward those electronic copy, electronic retention of billing records, all those things. It's important to keep those records because they're public records, but to move away from the hard copy would actually save a lot of time, resources for the department. And when you spread that across department-wide, so I'm sure that would be a time and a money savings.
Is that a statutory change that we could change across?
We're actually investigating whether that's a CSR or whether that's in the regulations or statutory, but we were just in that process, and we just started that actually when we got your letter. So we haven't completed that analysis yet, but yeah. It is,
but
something.
Those are the kind of things we're looking for. Yeah. If it's a requirement of statute, then we can make that.
You bet. And if it is, Mr. Chairman, we'll certainly get that to you. Another item that we came up with, and again, I think this has some. This is something that needs to be discussed and thought out, well thought out, is United States Department of Agriculture has actually put its inspection reports online for some of its various areas, and they're continuing to do that. It has saved them a tremendous amount of time and energy in terms of duplication of those copies and reports, what they are. If we have a weights and measures inspection, or if we have a plant pest inspection or a pesticide inspection or animal health inspection, you just go right online. We're a very large inspection department. When we have those inspections, those are public records. Once we finalize those inspections, they're public record. They go up on the ability to put them on the web would make a significant difference in savings for us if we chose to do that. But I think that actually is something that ought to be discussed not just with the relevant administration people, but also with the legislature. I won't spend any time on those large-scale trucks, Mr. Chairman, but you know I never miss a chance to talk about large-scale trucks, but I'm not going to talk about how much they're needed today.
I'll let you talk to Schaefer about that.
and of course, lastly, it's just a small thing, but I do think it's something that we ought to look at across, I know in the night and department I go through, I'm always on my folks about turning their lights off and the bathroom lights on and off. I think motion detectors in those all hallways or in those bathrooms and in the areas that are not always used would probably result in a tremendous energy savings across the board in all state buildings. We're out there on Missouri Boulevard. We have our building. We try to be vigilant about it, but there's probably not a night I don't leave the office where I'm not shutting off 10 or 15 lights. So those are just some of the items that we had. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? And this is where you guys are supposed to chime in here. All right.
We do, and every active brand is published in the ANBREC in the brand book annually. So we have to manually, we would put all that together on the computer, print it all out, send it over to a printer, and get it printed in every year. Then we continually update our electronic record of it. And it just seems to me that it would make a lot more sense and make it accessible to a greater amount of the public. I mean, a lot of people, the brand book's a neat book. I mean, it is really an interesting book. It's a historical document in a lot of ways. If we could put those online, we could actually put the historical stuff online. We could put the active ones online. And it would be a much bigger resource for, I think, all Missourians. And it would save the state money because we're actually preparing the book anyway. If we don't have to publish it, that's where the cost, the publishing and the mailing, because it's such a thick book. It's like mailing a budget. Book about the same size.
One of the things that came up last year was combining boards and commissions. Is this something you all look at, or have you had an opportunity yet to do that? Have you made any progress? What's the status on that?
We have taken a look at it. As you know, Department of Agriculture has five associated boards, the State Fair Board, MASBDA, Missouri Agriculture Small Business Development Authority, the Wine and Grape Board, and the Milk Board. It seems to me that those boards have such distinct personality, such distinct functions and missions that it wouldn't be feasible to, for example, take the functions of Wine and Grape, which is a promotion and marketing for our Missouri wineries, and thank goodness for it, because it really is one of the areas of the state's really thriving and moving forward, with the inspection services that happen with milk. It just doesn't make intuitive sense to us, and we only have that limited number of boards, but we're certainly open to entertain anything that you have suggestions on.
Since it is a topic of interest right now, to talk a little bit about the enforcement of puppy breeding law, regulations and what have you. I know you've made a lot of progress in that area, but just I think it'd be appropriate to.
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just briefly recap off the top of my head what we've done just in the 2 years since I've been fortunate enough to be director. In that time, we've actually changed a lot of the features internally of that department, including changing the management structure and the way it's structured, adding an inspector general position, if you will, underneath the manager of that program, which actually does a quality check on our inspections, changing our the number of inspections and the consistency of inspections by increasing the training of our staff, making sure they were trained. We've moved the territories that the people were in so they're not too comfortable in one territory, so we make sure that if you're getting it in Ray County, the enforcement you get in Clark County is the same things, actually, and I think that's important for both producers and consumers. We have added one additional inspector onto that. We're up to 13, including the manager and the inspector. Both have their own territories and both inspect. It's not every day. They do a little bit of management and a little bit of inspecting, so we have everybody out in the field. We spent a great deal of time also making sure that we're training better with the United States Department of Agriculture. We're actually been very fortunate to kind of lead the nation and been a pilot project of joint training with them. Now our inspectors do joint training on a quarterly basis. We actually go to inspect places jointly to make sure that we're being consistent in our enforcement standards, that we're actually looking at the same things, and we have this making sure that it's fairly enforced. We launched Operation Bark Alert, as you know, Mr. Chairman. Operation Bark Alert has resulted in, I think up to date, we're over 3,900 dogs that have been rescued as a result of either actions or enforcements of the department or Operation Bark Alert tips. I think we're up to about 300 tips on that off the top of my head, Mr. Chairman. And that has resulted in a lot of folks particularly in this problem of unlicensed breeders, which we've had considerable of. A lot of folks have started to come in. They've got licenses. We have a lot of people who said, well, wait, I didn't realize I had to have a license. They read the headlines. They didn't want any part of that. So we've had some people who've come into the fold, and we have some who have been prosecuted out of the fold. And I think that overall, all in all, if you look at what we've been able to accomplish in the last 2 short years in particular, we took what was already a good program, and I think if you ask professionals around the state and look at what we've been able to accomplish with USDA and internally with those changes, that we're once again leading the nation in enforcement and in our crackdowns.
So we do actually have statutes that regulate dogs or dog breeders, and we do actually have inspectors out there trying to do the job.
If you remember, Mr. Chairman, when I started this job, there weren't gray hairs. I can assure you we have those statutes, and we do enforce them. And not only that, I think it speaks very well of Missouri. For example, we just got back from a joint conference in December with USDA, where Missouri was actually the model that we were looking at with other states. And they brought in 50 states, tribes, and all kinds to look at what type of cooperation we've been able to do and how we're able to cooperate and the way that we've been able to accomplish that. So I'm not saying that we're perfect, Mr. Chairman, but we are certainly an excellent program, and we work very hard to ensure that we stay at the top of the profession.
Thank you. Questions? Well, I thought this was going to take all over. We may get done by 9 o'clock here before too long. Are there any... is there anybody here to testify as far as Department of Agriculture? Anybody that had questions relating to the Department of Agriculture? I've been looking through the emails. Have you picked anything up? I don't remember anything. We will forward any emails any questions that we got from the public. There's nothing else. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it.
Next up, Department of Natural Resources. Good morning.
I hope you'll forgive me for that. I know you've received the information we provided. I'm not going to go through all of that line by line. There are a couple of things in terms of cost savings ideas that the department's involved in that I think would be beneficial to the committee to understand. One is that we provided the Office of Administration with approximately $2.3 million in funding. Let me back up a little bit. The governor in 2009 issued an executive order requiring that energy consumption in state buildings be reduced by 2% per year for the next 10 years. In the first year of that, the Office of Administration reports to us that they were able to reduce energy consumption in state buildings by 5.6%. Through Recovery Act funds, the Department of Natural Resources Energy Division provided $2.3 million to the Office of Administration for another round of projects that we hope will reduce the cost in running those state buildings. Could be anything to some of the things that Director Hagler talked about, such as computers automatically shutting down at night, to motion detectors on lights. Some of the projects that we're funding with these dollars are in corrections and in mental health, where we have some of our largest facilities, and so you see the most energy costs. We're also providing to our state park system $1 million in Recovery Act federal funds for energy conservation projects that will reduce the energy costs in the state park system. As many of you may know, there's a tremendous backlog in infrastructure needs within the state park system. Roughly $40 million on the Katy Trail alone. So we believe anything we can do to reduce the costs that those individual facilities are paying out will be a benefit. Actually, today we are receiving a national award for one of our programs that may have broader applications in state government. We called it our Best Price Reverse Energy Auction. And the concept is that there were three separate auctions for energy conservation projects. Private sector companies were pre-qualified for this auction, and it was an online auction. Three one-hour auctions. There were two $500,000 awards. There were three $250,000 awards, and then there were 10 $100,000 awards. So these companies were bidding against each other, saying, I can accomplish this much energy reduction for a set price, whether it's the $250,000 or $500,000. We've talked internally within and also with the Office of Administration as to whether or not that might have broader applications in terms of purchasing or other things. So I just bring that up because actually today the department's receiving an award in innovation for being the only state in the country to take that kind of approach where we were using the free market system.
So have you proven results? Or, I mean, has it yielded?
The auction occurred approximately 6 months ago, so the companies had to then give us the projects, you know, tell us what projects you have that are going to make up, you know, they, for example, for $100,000, or I'm sorry, for $200,000, our projects came in at roughly 3 cents per kilowatt hour, which is far below what it would take for new generation. So what they had to do is then submit those projects to us so that we could analyze them, make sure that we concurred that those energy savings were going to occur. And so they're in the process of implementing those energy savings projects. We'll, of course, monitor those after they occur to make sure that the energy savings actually do occur. So that's just something I wanted to mention. It's kind of an isolated program that we developed and launched. We're very proud of it. We think it's proved very successful, and trust that as it proceeds, it will show that may have broader applications in terms of online competitive processes being expanded. You have the information on some of the IT projects. One that I would like to highlight, because it's been a tremendous interest to our stakeholders in terms of permitted entities, is the department issues many general permits, which essentially have the same requirements in them. An efficiency that we and our stakeholders both agree would be beneficial is if we automate that, where they, if they're going to undertake a certain activity, they notify us on the web. The requirements are already there. It reduces the requirement to wait for a permit to be processed, a permit that's going to say the same thing that the other general permits say. So it will reduce staff time, be more efficient for those that are receiving permits from the department. So that is something that is an IT project, but it really goes beyond that in efficiencies for those seeking permits from the department. In terms of legislative ideas, there is a very small, may seem small, but for me to back up a little bit, the department, for those of you that are not aware, the department's operating budget is about $311 million. Of that, 68% of it is PSD, or pass-through, $211 million. Only 2.9% of the department's funding is general revenue funding. It equates to about $8.9 million. The federal funds that the department receives is approximately 14% of that budget. And our dedicated fee funds make up the remaining 83% of our operating budget. The GR within the department in the last 10 years has decreased from approximately $26 million in 2001 to the $8.9 million that I just mentioned. FTE count has dropped from roughly 2,060 in FY02 to 1,780 in FY11, a decrease of roughly 278. Last year, or in the last year and a half, we have reduced 150 positions within our Division of State Parks, our air program, solid waste, hazardous waste, and our state land survey program because of cash flow issues. Of the 150 FTE that were reduced, approximately 70 of those were actually layoffs. So I say that only to say that the fee portions of our budget are critically important to us. And so House Bill 89 and House Bill 80 or 97 on water fee extensions, we support both of those. They're flat-out extensions of the water fees. One goes through 2013, one goes through 2015. House Bill 98 has been filed that would extend our hazardous waste and lead acid battery fee bills or fees. We support that bill as well. We are reinitiating or redoubling our efforts on our stakeholder meetings and meeting with those that we regulate. We've got meetings scheduled for our water protection program and our hazardous waste program within the next couple of weeks. We anticipate having those monthly as we move forward, certainly through session, but and then we'll determine with the stakeholders how often they feel we need to have those. Given that the department has such a small amount of general revenue within the department, and a large portion of that goes to our water resources efforts, so our Missouri River fight with the other upstream states, our water quantity efforts in terms of water supply in southwest Missouri, there are a number of other things in terms of environmental emergency response that don't necessarily lend themselves to other funding sources. But we're always trying to do more with less. So a lot of the ideas that we submitted to you are fairly small scale, but we have to be always looking at those types of things. One such example in terms of a legislative change is right now we have a legislative proposal that would allow us to create an impressed fund. And to give you an idea of what that would do, right now in our Division of Geology and Land Survey in Rolla and our State Parks Division, they have merchandise that is available for the public that visits those sites to purchase, but they have no statutory authority to have cash boxes on hand. But that's, you know, just a small revenue-generating idea that would make it more convenient for the citizens that would be visiting those sites as well. Natural resource damages. There is a cap, and for those of you that are not familiar with this concept, I'll use the Tomsoc dam failure as an example. There was a large amount of payment that went in to the state coffers into the natural resource damages fund. Due to that, part of that is being used to extend the Katy Trail and other things within the state park system. Right now, there's a $2 million cap within that fund, or is anything over that is subject to a biennium sweep. Because of the nature of us trying to do more cost recovery for things that happen that damage the resources or require the state to expend staff time in responding to, we are proposing to exempt that fund from the biennium sweep. It gets into a large legal issues because many times the state has received those funds as a result of a legal settlement, and so. Because it's swept, that may have other ramifications in terms of the court that awarded the money for a specific purpose. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions that you have.
We got several emails suggesting how you all might improve service.
I suspect you did.
One of the most prevalent emails coming in was talking about the layers of decision making within DNR, and I don't know whether right or wrong, but talking about six layers of DNR, and just the fact that because things went through so many layers, it created an inability to make a decision. Would you want to respond to that, or is that fair, or is it help me out here?
I would say that in some occasions that is fair, and I know that our new director, should she be confirmed, is very interested in reducing those layers and reducing the steps in decision-making processes where at all possible. We have a number of environmental regulatory programs that then report up through our Division of Environmental Quality. In the past, those divisions then reported to a specific deputy. The new director is wanting those divisions to report directly to her to empower them to run their divisions and make those decisions without so much of that occurring in terms of management layers. So I would say that is something that we are undertaking doing right now.
Senator Parsons.
Mr. Chairman. Just a couple brief questions for you. One minor thing I read in the email was where you put out a magazine six times a year.
No, I believe we've reduced that to three times a year, but we do.
And I assume you bulk mail out like anybody else would, so you don't really know whether it hits home or not through the system. Do you know what the cost of that is?
I'm looking at my budget director.
Oh, I understand.
I'll have to get that to you, Senator.
Okay. I'd like to know what the cost of that is or what that is, and then I'd like to know what the circulation of it is. If you can tell me how many you're mailing out on that. The other thing, you regulate on the well, digging of the wells, the septic tanks. Does that fall under your...
Are you on-site septics? There's some overlap between the Department of Health, who, if you have an individual septic system on your property, that would be regulated by the Department of Health. If you have a package plant that's
if you're in the business of it.
In the business of...
Digging wells or putting in septic
tanks.
Yes,
that's wellhead protection. That would be within our Division of Geology and Land Survey in Rolla.
One thing I keep getting feedback on is that, you know, whatever they're with you guys on the state level, as far as regulatory, then on the local levels, they have to go through it again, and for each county. I mean, if you're in the business of digging wells or putting in septic tanks, it looks like to me you should be able to cross county lines. And that maybe not be you as much as a local issue. But you got two agencies, again, making laws for these people.
Well, I know we would certify them, but that would not prohibit them from working county to county.
But I just wondered if you had worked with that on the local levels on that issue or anything.
I've not heard that. Okay. This is the first time I've heard that issue, but I can certainly follow up with you on that.
The other thing where you talked about your employees, your FTEs, of the 278 or whatever you had in this, were those actual employees or were those positions?
Well, the 270 odd that I mentioned were the amount of reduction in the last 10 years in FTE. The 150.
But were they actual positions, what I'm asking? Because many, many times in you guys' budget, you'll have so many people out there, but you don't really have those slots filled.
Yes.
So are we talking actual people?
It's a mixture of both. Okay. If you look back over 10 years, in terms of the 150 that I mentioned, 70 of those were actually layoffs where there was a person in that position.
For me, that would be helpful if I had the real McCoy, I guess I want to say, for better terms, figures. Because I know that goes on all the time where we've got these things padded, and we really don't know actually how many employees did we actually lose, other than we do the positions. And everybody does that. You're not the only agency. Most agencies have that out there to kind of up their sleeve, I want to say, a little bit. Yeah. So the other thing I want to ask you, when you were talking about the layoffs and you was talking about you'd laid off many people, so many times these occurs on the local areas, which affect a lot of us. My question to you is, how much of that layoff or how many positions did you lay off in the administration section? Not replace, but how many people did you actually lay off in the administrative end of your department?
And I would have to get back with you on how many of those 70.
I would like to know that compared to the people on the ground on the local levels on that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Yes. You mentioned permits and streamlining that process and IT. Could you expand on that a little bit? Is there something the legislature needs to do?
Well,
that is very interesting to me, because if there's one thing that any business entity needs is a little certainty and the ability to move forward. And I appreciate your thoughts on that, I think, if I understand it. But I'd like you to expand on that a little bit.
Well, for general permits, and let me use land disturbance permits as an example, where somebody's going to go out and they're doing a development. It's over an acre. Under the federal requirements, we're required to issue them a land disturbance permit. Most of those permits have the same requirements in them. You know, and that when I say a general permit, that's a permit that is already written, as opposed to a site specific permit where we go in and determine based upon specific conditions of that site. But if the permit says the same thing, then why should we be processing the same piece of paper over and over again? So this idea of an electronic notice of intent, the requirements would be in existence. They would be online. Someone would get on. They would notify us of their intent to undertake a certain activity. And they would, by notifying, and there would still be, you know, some fee associated with that as we envision it. You know, the fee wouldn't go away because there's still something that the department has to do. I mean, just issuing a piece of paper, if you don't have the ability or staff to go out and look at these or do compliance assistance to try and help them understand the regulations. But the idea is they would get that immediately. They could then undertake their activity, wouldn't have to wait for the department staff to be able to process a permit that says the same thing that many other that all the other general permits would say.
So they could look at your internet site, they could see what is required for that procedure that they're going to be doing, they check a box that yes, this is what it is, and it would be submitted.
Yes.
That's better than laying on somebody's desk for a month and a half before you get
I agree. It's much more efficient. But the thing I would add is you ask the thing we need to do that.
Yes.
Those are IT applications. So in many cases, we're having to either use the Office of Administration ITSD to help us develop those, or you know in some cases they use private contractors to develop those systems for us. And obviously, each time we do that, there is a upfront cost. Now, I would argue that in the long run, it's more efficient and would be a cost savings. But many times there is an upfront cost, which is why we're trying to target, and the reason we're targeting land disturbance permits is because that's the largest number of permits in our water program that we issue, roughly 5,000 permits a year.
Okay, I'll ask, what does that permit fee go to right now? And how much do you have on hand in that account? Get that to us. Is that enough to maybe cover some of those upfront costs?
We can get you the specific information. You can draw your own conclusions. My reaction in having looked at those numbers is the land disturbance permits are one of our lowest fees, and it's the largest number of permits that we issue. So if you look at the staff time, now that, well, could change
could
with this process.
The savings with this.
Yes. And that's our intent.
Right.
So we can certainly visit with you more on the specifics of that.
If you could, please. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for coming in today. You were talking about your budget and the makeup and the sources of revenue, and you used a percentage of your budget that comes from fees. Did I hear you correctly? I'm
mm-hmm.
sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Are fees and fines the same thing in your world, or are those two different things?
And two totally separate things. Any penalty as a result of a violation that we would uncover goes to the school fund. It does not go to the department.
All right. Thank you for explaining that.
One of the suggestions that came into the office was that the department is having trouble getting things moved, was taking the permitting process out of DNR and moving it into DED. What would be your and the rationale was that the department's job is taking care of pollution and monitoring and what have you. Permitting process is more of a check the box and make sure everything's where it's supposed to be. And moving that, taking that burden off of Department of DNR, and moving it into DED or some such a, and thus being able to take that, let you all do what you're supposed to be doing, and let somebody else take care of the permitting process.
Well, it would be very difficult to separate the federal delegation from the Department of Natural Resources and another department. Right now, we are the federally delegated in terms of our water program, and then federally authorized in our hazardous waste program entity. I don't know of any state that splits up those responsibilities in terms of federally delegated authority between more than one agency.
Well, again, it was a suggestion that came in.
Yeah, I understand.
And you know, and just because we haven't done it before may not, you know, there's some of that that makes some sense to me, and we'll pursue it further, but I just wanted to know what your reaction would be.
Yeah, and you know, there's been discussion about moving different parts and pieces of the department, and a lot of times what we get back to is what is the cost savings or what is the efficiency that occurs. I mean, you would largely, I'm assuming, have the same people doing it because they have knowledge of what those processes are. And from my perspective, simply changing the logo on the door really doesn't accomplish much of an efficiency.
We've got any other questions? I've got a couple of folks that are come personally. I'd like for you to stick around and maybe respond.
You want me to stay here or come up when you need me?
If you want to just go back and then we'll allow you to have a chance to respond in a little bit. First up, Susan, would you like to come up and talk a little bit about parks and historic sites?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Susan Flotter, president of the Missouri Parks Association. Last year in this rebooting process, one of the most frequent comments was that there could be efficiencies in shifting the park division to the conservation department. And I wanted to just make a brief comment about that in case that's in anyone's mind here. In the general public, there are a lot of people who don't distinguish between parks and conservation. They think that they are in the same department. And when they learn that they're not, they think, well, we should shift them. My concern about this, we really have a wonderful conservation department in this state, and we have a wonderful nationally recognized state park system. It's not large. It's below average in funding and in staffing and in acreage. But it is extremely high quality in terms of the nature of the sites and the management of the system. And what is really important is the mission, which combines concern for natural resources and cultural resources. And that mission, which is very strong in this state and which recognizes both natural and cultural resources in all units of the park system, not just cultural resources in historic sites and natural resources in natural parks, that mission and the integration of management between those resources is what is so good about the Missouri park system and what has resulted in its having been among the top five park systems every time there's been a national recognition for the top systems in the nation. So we think that it's important to remember, if you're thinking of any kind of movement like this, any transfer, that would not be a good thing to do. The Conservation Department's mission is fish, wildlife, and forests, and they have had no mission for cultural resources. So it's very important that the park system remain a unit and remain operated as a unit.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your time and for coming. Mark?
Good morning. My name is Mark Nolte. I'm a professional land surveyor in the state of Missouri. I'm the elected Lafayette County surveyor, as well as the deputy Saline County surveyor, and currently the president of the Missouri Society of Professional Land Surveyors. As a land surveyor, we rely greatly on the Office of the Land Survey Program in Rolla. This is the land survey program is under the umbrella of the Department of Natural Resources, and it's funded solely by $1 fee that's collected when a document is recorded in recorder's offices that apply to the conveyance of real property. That would be a deed, filing of a plat, whatnot. The duty of the land surveying program is to restore and preserve the evidence of the United States public land survey system and other boundary markers. Two, to establish and maintain a repository for the storage and dissemination of the land survey records. And three, to maintain a geodetic network of monuments to support the Missouri State Plan coordinate system. All these were assigned by the 75th General Assembly. At that time, the land survey program was called the Land Survey Authority. Around 1974, the program was transferred to the Department of Natural Resources, along with other agencies in a cost-saving measure. This took the direction of the program away from the professionals in the field, such as the land surveyors and the engineers, and gave it to the Department of Natural Resources. Because of this, in 1991, there was a committee formed. It was called the Land Survey Advisory Committee. It was to become a liaison between the committee and the land surveyors and the Department of Natural Resources. In Lafayette County alone, beyond just the repository where we can call and have orders of land surveying data sent to us in order to perform boundary work, the land survey program has set quite a few GRS monuments.
Sorry about that. We need to throw all lobbyists out before we start anyway. So,
and also they've reestablished, actually the two county surveyors have done the work, but they've provided the money to reestablish the boundary between Ray and Lafayette counties, one a boundary that was lost due to the movement of the Missouri River during a flood in the 50s. But because of cost allocations by the Department of Natural Resources over roughly the last 10 to 15 years, and especially in the last 5 years, the land surveying program has begun to suffer and not been able to fulfill its statutory obligation to the residents of the state of Missouri. As land surveyors, we believe that land ownership to be one of the most fundamental rights of the residents of the state of Missouri. We've tried to correspond with the Department of Natural Resources requesting relief from these cost allocations. In 1995, cost allocations equaled roughly $57,000, and I've got a table that would show you what cost allocations have equated to over the last years. As I said, in 95, those cost allocations were $57,000. Last year, those cost allocations equated to $451,000. That's a full 35% of the entire budget that's earned by the land survey program from the $1 recording fee, which is their sole source of funding. In total, by next year, the Department of Natural Resources will have mined nearly $5 million from a program that was created not to be a revenue-building department. It's forecast probably by the end of 2011 that the land surveying program will cease to exist. Already, 10 positions have been lost and 6 positions furloughed. I thought it interesting to equate the number of 150 across the entire Department of Natural Resources, where a full 10 full positions and 6 furloughed positions came directly from the land surveying program that probably only had 24 to start with. Because we've lost nearly 45% of all the staffing at that program. No projects can be planned, the repository cannot respond in a timely manner, and no new field work really can be accomplished by the department. In conclusion, what the members of the Missouri Society of Professional Surveyors contend is that the Department of Natural Resources, through its cost allocation participation with the land surveying program, is no longer a good steward of the land surveying program and is a harm to the maintenance of the public land survey system. We would ask that at a minimum we receive some kind of a relief as far as a restoration of funding from this department or an exit from the Department of Natural Resources.
Questions? Senator?
Mr. Chairman, a comment. My district includes Rolla, Missouri, and I'm familiar with that division, the only statewide division outside of Jefferson City. And it is a big concern. I think what some folks don't understand, the corner reestablishment program was a big cost savings to the citizens of Missouri for real estate transfers And this small division has to maintain all survey records for the state of Missouri, and it gets quite cumbersome sometimes. At present, most of those records are maintained in hard copy form. In addition, the Division of Geology is extremely important right now worldwide. Many, as we become a global economy, many different world economies are looking. They maintain core samples of all areas of the state. Those are being studied by people from China, Japan, and they're investing heavily in our mines due to our rare earths. Missouri presently has no extraction fee whatsoever. We're going to have to either maintain that funding stream for, I think, a vital division, or find a better funding stream, because they are literally working with. We did get a new truck for core sampling, thank God. They're working bare bones, and the number of people in the department that are responsible for these records and what's going on have been cut drastically. You bring up a good point.
Thank you.
We have to look hard at this, I think.
I had a question. So what are you getting in additional services? It cost $57,000 in 1995 and $451,000 in 2009. I'm sure you've got a lot of bells and whistles you got for that money, or what? How did that?
I can't explain that.
Any questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming down. Anybody else here that wants to respond or has anything about Department of Action? Oh, Daryl. Daryl here? Sorry about that. I wouldn't, if I'd paid attention to my notes, I wouldn't have.
That's okay.
Good morning. Tell
Good
us
morning,
who you are.
Senators. Thank you for having me here. My name's Daryl Bowles. I'm an environmental consultant. I've pretty much built a career around a very narrow niche within the Missouri Department of Natural Resources regulatory system of the tank system. Tank systems within the hazardous waste program. Over the last 12 years, I've been self-employed with my own company, and from my perspective, I get a very unique perspective of watching the regulated community get in the interaction between the regulatory community. And over the years, I've seen this problem wax and wane in one direction or the other. Most recently, though, the problem has been moving away from just common sense application of the regulations of the underground storage tank sites. And the last thing I want to do today is come here and bash the DNR, the tank section, the hazardous waste program. The department is filled with wonderful professionals that are very capable of doing their jobs and on a daily basis, and whom I've worked with over the years. But in rebooting government, what I see as a problem as a private citizen here, I can also see translate into helping our economy, lower gas prices for everybody at the pumps. I can give you some examples of this lack of common sense, but the clients that I work for are frustrated, very frustrated. Again, nobody wants to see us go back to the days when we didn't take care of our soil and water and our natural resources from leaking underground storage tank sites. But I certainly do believe that from my perspective and from my experience, a good dose of common sense within that program would go a long ways toward helping our economy.
Give us an example just for...
Well, most recently, I managed the removal of an underground storage tank for the city of Albany in Albany, Missouri. And I was there. I was pulled the samples. I looked at the soil. I smelled the soil. I didn't taste it. But I took them to the laboratory. We got the soil sample results back. And only one sample went above the threshold of what constitutes a release. Now, that threshold is very, very low. The DNR sets that threshold of what constitutes a release. Once that threshold is met, the value of of private property, and I'm sorry, in this case it's municipal property, but the value of private property just goes down. It plummets. It's very hard to be sold. It's hard to have money lent against it. And from that day forward, it can take years and tens of thousands of dollars before you finally get that elusive no further action letter from the DNR. And that process is very, it just costs a lot of money. In this case, one soil sample barely went above the threshold of what constitutes a release. And in my reporting to the tank section of the DNR, I made a very good case and explained using their own guidance document and their own regulations of why that situation did not constitute risk to public health, safety, and environment. In their response, it was ignored. My argument wasn't even addressed. It wasn't ignored. What the city administrator in Albany got in return was a checklist. Here's the things. Here's the lines you crossed. Here are the things that you've got to do. Totally void of common sense.
Is that an arbitrary figure set by our Department of Natural Resources? Is that something that comes from the federal government or what, the release level?
Threshold or the default target level is set by the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. Question.
Thank you for coming today. In case the senators are wondering, I can tell you when you have one out of 20 samples that don't pass the threshold, it takes you $120,000 to clean it up. That's just my personal experience.
Well, and the problem becomes...
It was a soap water tank, by the way. It was not even an oil tank. So I'm not sure what Dawn dishwashing detergent does to the soil, but apparently somebody thinks it's bad.
Devastating, huh?
$120,000.
The problem, from my perspective, what I see when those property values go down, the real estate market suffers. The cost, most of the cleanups in Missouri are funded by the Missouri Petroleum Storage Tank Insurance Fund. And that has been a very well-managed fund by Carol Amy, the executive director. She's done a great job of maintaining solvency. Without that, most property owners and tank owners in Missouri would be on their own for these tens of thousands of dollars of cost to get that no further action letter. It's just a simple matter of common sense. The DNR or the tank section, in many cases, they put these guidance documents out there, and I can cite many examples, and I'm sure Carol Amy could too. The owners will follow the regulations. They will provide the information that the DNR wants. The DNR will look at the information. The tank section will look at the information. Well, that's not what we meant in the guidance document, so we're going to make you jump through a couple of more hoops before we can make it. What's the reason for this, though? That's kind of what my letter alluded to, and I don't know if you want me to allude to that in here, but like I said, I don't want this to be a bash on the DNR. They do a lot of great things, and they do a lot of things very well. My sense is it's out of self-preservation. The less number of sites there are to regulate, the less need for the regulator to exist.
Thank you. We appreciate you coming forward. Any other questions? I'm sorry, Senator Parson.
Chairman, just inquire briefly.
Sure. Yes,
sir. You know, one of the things Senator Keogh mentioned over there, I've been one of those people that's had to live through this scenario, too. And just to echo what you're saying, it's not a question of the value of your property going down. It's a question you can't even sell your property. You get into a Phase 1, Phase 2 environmental study, they find something wrong, like you said, a trace, I might add, that can move in the water tables below the ground at any given point, which happens. You can come back and do another check and check clean. Absolutely ruin businesses by doing that. Now, and if you're in the gas station business or the gas and oil business, you are going to have, from time to time, a contaminant on the ground. You can probably test under the standards they test today. You will probably test when they go testing looking for something like that.
Right.
The problem is just what you said. They ruin individual property owners. I mean, and once you get that reputation in a small town or a small area that property was under DNR control or you violated that, which means basically nothing. To me, it meant nothing when you get an iodine and all that. But you ruin that property, there's nobody going to buy that piece of property. Very seldom are you ever going to buy it.
Well, until you get that elusive no further action letter from the DNR.
That's true, but it's still very difficult to sell that property.
Even with even within the letter that you get from the DNR, there's always a paragraph at the end that says, if we find something later on down the road, we still reserve the right to come back and do something. or make you do something.
And that really needs to be looked at through DNR to make sure what we're doing with that. I don't mind going after bad operators. I don't.
No,
but I'm telling you, that is a very risky business. You go down and you ruin people's lives and ruin people's business, especially when they've had it for 20 years or something, and all of a sudden you tell them you go through that, and all of a sudden something you thought you was going to sell and retire on someday or had the end of it, you have nothing, basically.
It's the economic impact that I'm most concerned about.
Yeah, I agree.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Others that have response, Leslie?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Leslie Holloway representing Missouri Farm Bureau. I wanted to talk for a minute about the permitting fees situation that DNR has talked about, but really there's a bigger issue that I'd like to also highlight during this section. But on the permitting fees and the permitting system, that's a very important program to many of our farmers and ranchers. A number of different permits, some that have been discussed here, and we realize that there are issues in terms of streamlining that process and hope that we will see some of those streamlining measures put into place and do have some ideas about that. We are working with the Department of Natural Resources through their advisory committees and looking for ways to try to make that better. But related in terms of farmers and ranchers who are trying to comply, who are complying with laws and regulations, operating their businesses properly, is the issue of nuisance lawsuits. And that is something that we see as a real opportunity for the legislature to be able to make some significant changes that could be very helpful, could help increase the protection of those farmers and ranchers who are doing the right thing from these nuisance lawsuits, which we seem to be seeing proliferating by attorneys coming in from out of state, East Coast, and other operations that are far removed from our Midwestern agriculture farmers and ranchers. And they are generating enough money for these attorneys, these firms, that they are coming back again for second and third and fourth bites of the apple and moving into other states as well. They're going after agriculture in other Midwestern states, Indiana and Ohio in particular. A particular law firm that's active in Missouri has moved into these other states. And so we are asking that the legislature look again at our nuisance law protections and see what can be done to try to strengthen those protections. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Just a observation. Once somebody has been compensated for a nuisance, they have the choice of going ahead and liquidating it, but they make a choice to stay, and then they want to come back 3 or 4 or 5 years later, and we have operations that are being sued for the second, third, and fourth time. And once you've been compensated, that should be it. I definitely agree with this. Something we've got to look at, and we will do that. I feel sure. Thank you. Is there anyone else from that? From the public that has come and wanted to testify for the committee? I got a feeling we're going to run over and we'll recess and come back after session, which won't take very long. But what's that? Yeah. But I want to be sure that if there's anybody here that has traveled, has an opportunity before we get to that point. If not, I'd like to have DNR come back up and maybe respond to a couple of things that were mentioned. I guess let's take the land survey first.
Okay.
What is the progression between 50,000 and 450,000?
Well, it's a little bit apples and oranges in that 57,000 was prior to the consolidation of IT functions into ITSD within the Office of Administration, so that 57 would not have included any of the IT functions in terms of technical support, computers, things like that. This is not unique to the land survey program. I mean, all of our when you get into a tough economic times, all of our programs, you know, raise issues on cost allocation and IT costs and all of this. I would submit to you that the that you know we will certainly look at and have been looking at what we might be able to do in this regard. There are a couple of IT projects that are proceeding that will assist the land survey program in being more efficient. One of their complaints historically had been they had been paying into IT and they had not seen a lot of their projects rise up to the level of being implemented. There are a couple of those that are moving forward as we speak. One of the issues is something that was alluded to, I think, by Senator Brown and by Mr. Nolte, is that the document recording fee was set in the 60s. The land survey program receives a dollar off every recorded document. There are a number of other entities that receive a piece of that document recording fee. I know the surveyors had a couple of years ago had legislation that was introduced that would have given them an additional dollar on those recorded documents. We used to have, in addition to funding the land survey program, we used to have funding that we would pass through to counties to help them with county boundary delineation, state boundary delineation issues. So we continue to look at cost allocation fund, look at ways that we can reduce that, not only for the Division of Geology and Land Survey in Rolla, but all of our other divisions as well, because when you get into this these economic times and with the budget being what it is, it is an issue for more than just their program.
No offense, but maybe if I don't know.
I'd probably be more helpful if I gave you the breakdown of what in the 57,000 range, what we estimate they were paying in IT costs or what the department was paying for the IT costs in that
time frame. Just looking at 2008-2009, there's $110,000 increase between 2008-2009. I mean, it would seem to me that they can't afford any more efficiencies. I mean, if let's go back to what we were doing in 1995 and forget the IT program. It looks like that fund has been used. It's been mined for dollars. Is what it really looks like from just a country boy's viewpoint.
We'll take a look at it and get back to you. And I know Senator Brown, you'll have an interest in that as well, Senator.
Just the comment you just made. Some money's being sent to IT, but yet they're not getting the programs back that they need or the programs back in a timely fashion. Is this something that needs to be audited?
Well, that's certainly up to those that make those decisions. But it gets at what we were talking about earlier, Senator Munsellinger, in that we have a finite amount of IT dollars that are given to the department, and we have to decide whether we're going to do an IT project on electronic notification of intent on permitting, or whether we're going to do an IT project in our division or in our land survey program, or whether we're going to do an IT project. So
but
it's more of a priority.
Was this land survey money that was sent to IT for their program to help them do the job they need to do?
The way it is assessed is that all of our programs pay into this, and then a list of projects are submitted and they're prioritized, and in order of what management thinks the importance of the project is.
So, in essence, you're taking money from one program and diverting it to others.
You could look at it that way. I mean, that you know, that's the whole idea of cost allocation funds. Someone has to pay for the administration of the department, you know, the budgeting, the HR functions, the employee relations when you get into issues with performance with employees, you know, keeping the lights on, maintaining the buildings, those types of things.
The budgeting process cost $110,000 more in 2009 than it did in 2008.
I'll have to look at what all went into that and get back to you.
Any other questions? What about the tank? The last testimony we just
the tanks issue. I'm going to defer to our Division of Environmental Quality Director. I know we have a stakeholder process that's underway right now, looking at the requirements on those cleanups. But I'll defer to her on that.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning,
Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Leanne Tippett Mosby. I'm the Division Director for Division of Environmental Quality. As Mr. Button pointed out, we do have an ongoing stakeholder work group on the tanks issues. We've had the tanks program has been around for a number of years. We've done many cleanups in that program, and at this point, most of the cleanups that we have remaining are the more difficult types of cleanups. You know, there might be groundwater contamination concerns, et cetera. And so we have been working through a risk-based process, because the department believes strongly that there may be opportunities for some of these properties that are contaminated to restore them to productive use rather than let them sit idle. But the key there is to ensure that if there is contamination that's left in place at these sites, that it will never create a situation where a person is exposed to that contamination and may become ill. And that's what the work group is working through right now. There's issues related to what's appropriate notification for adjacent property owners that might have contamination on their property. When is it appropriate to have public participation? When is it appropriate, perhaps, to put restrictions on the deed? Is that appropriate, or is there another mechanism that we can use to ensure that there's enough public information available for people that might be the prospective buyers of this property to protect themselves? We don't want people to build a structure over contaminated soil where there might be vapors coming up into that structure and causing illness. We don't want people to sink a well into contaminated groundwater, etc. Those are some of the main issues that the work group will be looking at. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Bowles, but I think you're a part of that work group. And if not, I would invite you to participate in that. So,
thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Briefly, do you have any owners that are involved in your group that has been through this?
We sent out an invitation to thousands of
my
people.
My question is somebody that has went through the system that you have actually fined and went through it, are they part of your...
I know that we've got a lot of consultants that are there representing, like Mr. Bowles, that have worked for owners. I don't know that we were able to get any owners. We would love to have that.
Why would you not want that public input?
We would love to have that.
So have you offered it to them?
Yeah, we sent out a solicitation to thousands of people to join this work group. We've got about, I think, 25 right now.
I think you should seriously look into that to make sure you get that side of the equation instead of just your side, because when you were in your comments, you were talking about we don't want to make anybody ill. Well, none of us want to get sick, but let's face facts here. These violations, these really minor violations, ain't going to make anybody sick. You know, what I'm talking about.
And Senator, I think what she's referring to is the whole risk-based notion of a cleanup where if there is, we're not talking about the situation you're talking about where there's a trace amount. We're talking about if there's agreed that there's contamination there, but because it's going to be used for a service station continuing, that there might not be need to clean it up to residential standards. But then if you don't, what kind of safeguards need to be in place in case that property ever has another use?
I understand. I'm just a firm believer that people that have to really go through these systems.
I understand, and we'd love to have somebody participate in that has that perspective.
I would also like to point out that we're also having separate discussions. I see Mr. Leone in the room with Missouri Petroleum Marketers and Convenience Stores Association. Obviously, Mr. Leone has a number of members who would be owners of these sites. And also Carol Amy from the Petroleum Storage Insurance Fund is also in the group. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you all very much. I'm sure we'll be talking. Is there anybody else here to talk about DNR, agriculture, or conservation? What I'd like to do very quickly, we're going to ask the Highway Patrol to come up. I'd really like to have a response with the number of suggestions of a single license plate, and we'll get to, hopefully we can address that issue briefly, and then we will recess and reassemble, as, and it shouldn't take more than 10 or 15 minutes probably, but after session we'll reconvene in next door because there's another meeting in this room. Respond to what's Highway Patrol's position on single license plates, and then we'll talk about what we found out last year. But go ahead.
Sorry, what they're for? It's a means of identifying the vehicle and the registered owner, but it also does a few other things. Number one, to get those plates renewed, it ensures that there are no personal property taxes or sales taxes outstanding. Additionally, to renew a plate, many of those vehicles are required to go through a safety inspection. So it's a chance to provide a safety inspection as well as verify insurance. I've heard repeatedly about the revenue savings, and it does sound that if you're paying $1 million for two, then you should only pay $500,000 for one. But from my conversations with the Department of Revenue, they buy materials in bulk so that to buy a lesser amount of materials is going to increase the price of those materials. Right now, the Department of Revenue has a number of plates that they have ordered in duplicate, and so those plates are now stockpiled, and that would be something that they would have to deal with in terms of getting rid of one of those plates. As an enforcement tool, the Highway Patrol believes that you'll meet more vehicles than you follow. So by meeting those, you get a chance to identify more vehicles than you actually come up behind. With that in mind, for law enforcement as well as for witnesses, that's a 50% reduction in the chance to identify a vehicle. Identity is necessary when it comes to Amber Alert, stolen vehicles, security cameras, and other things of that nature. Additionally, there's new technology out there right now that many departments are going to, which are called license plate readers. And I know I read an article recently from the Kansas City area. With that technology, we're going to reduce the chance that they can capture that plate by 50% also.
And let's explain that. Just do you all have that capability?
We do.
Okay, and for everybody's information, my understanding is that without the officer being involved, the recognition equipment runs a plate. Every time it meets a plate, it runs plate, and the information I've had that it's done a great job in picking up stolen cars, and it's, you know, it runs a plate, and if there's a problem, then it alerts the officer, and so I think that, you know, there seems to be a lot of popularity within the legislature to go to single plate, but I think that we pay a cost when we do that.
Certainly, in terms of enforcement. I testified last year in committee to the number of citations written for expired license plate. And of course, that was only under 301.020, which says that the owner of a motor vehicle shall register that vehicle annually. If by chance there's another person driving that vehicle who's not the owner, then it's written under another charge code. So the information I gave, which essentially said for the past 4 years, about 14,000 arrests, those numbers have gone up dramatically when you include the other violations. And to make it just a quick point, we work with the Department of Revenue to coming up with the configuration where the first letter, alpha character of the license plate, corresponds with the month of issue. Since we've done that, the number of arrests have gone up. In fact, in 2010, we've written 28,000 summonses for license plate violations of different ones. And this isn't about those, but more about what it does.
Any questions for him?
That was Senator Bartle's idea to do away with the one license plate, and it was attached to a
omnibus bill that I carried last year. Interestingly enough, right when that amendment went on my bill, before this discussion started, my staff called all the other states that only have one license plate and called the highway patrols and asked them what problems they had as far as enforcement with one plate, and not one of them said that they had any of these problems that we seem to envision. Now that may change now that they've had a talking to by various people, but off the cuff question, nobody seemed to have had a problem. Thank you.
We will reconvene with transportation next door, and then we will be making our recommendations that we will take to the full Senate. Thank you all for your patience. It should not be that long before we're back.